We're live. Whoa. Hey, how's it going, everybody? Thank you for joining me here. As per usual, I want to first thank Scott for having me and Travis for making sure I look and sound fantastic. Well, we'll see how I sound. He makes me look good, though. I encourage questions, comments, conversational direction, suggestions. And it's very helpful if you all use all caps or something. I have one eye on the chat thread. It helps those things stand out to me so I don't miss anything coming through. And I very much encourage you guys to help direct the conversation. I did have a few things in mind today. The first being fretless. I am not primarily a fretless player, but I do. This is my fretless, and it's mainly for sessions and things. But I do love the sound. And I had recently had a number of questions come through all at once about how to work on fretless intonation and sound and get the fretless chops together. So I thought, maybe that'd make an interesting topic for today's discussion. So I wanted to take that a little bit as far as I can. It's not my primary instrument, so we'll take it as far as I can. But then I wanted to segue into something a little more regarding mindset and learning. So, fretless. I think the best way to work on intonation, the way I worked on intonation, and this was via suggestions from upright players I knew growing up, was to take everything very slowly. The one thing I quickly realized, I will get there. I see questions already. Awesome. Take things very slowly. It is easy to fall into the trap of, you know, to just start wiggling around and feeling like, yeah, that's pretty good. Like I can hear, and what you're not really. Things are going by so quickly you can't really discern whether they're actually in tune or not. The thing that separates the men from the boys, you want to try and play as naked as possible to really highlight your intonation, because there is a lot of micro adjustments that can happen. And I do have, you can't see them very well, but I have little lines on the side of this fretboard. I'm kind of a disaster if it's completely blank, but I have lines here that guide me so I can see it when I'm looking down. So you want to play slowly and with intention. One of the ways I started was strings. Yes, we'll talk about that too. Playing through a tuner slowly. I have a tuner on my screen here, and I can load that up, and I'll just play a major scale, a nice chromatic tuner, and it really gives you a sense, especially if you have those lines, of visually where you want to be, because there's a tendency to try and put the finger directly on the line, but actually the intonating spot is just on this side of your finger, so you're actually going to wind up being a little bit sharp and having to roll back. So instead, I really pay attention. As much as I can, try not to look at my neck too much, because one of the largest aspects of developing good intonation is muscle memory. You need to train your fingers where to be. So it's helpful not to get too reliant upon the visual cues. And speaking of this first question here, I can't seem to keep my second and third fingers far enough apart. Imagine the Spock thing. Which affects my intonation. Do you have any suggestions for exercises that might help? And yes, again, playing through a tuner is a great way to start. Same exercise I use to warm up on fretted bass, one finger per fret. And you can just go and slide up a half step and do it backwards. dropped my one finger per fret spacing. That also practicing scales horizontally this way of the fretboard. And I would practice sometimes stretching, pivoting, because you have to move your thumb as well. So I'd practice kind of the combination of stretching and pivoting my hand. Then you can keep going. So I think really working on scales and playing with an intentional one finger per fret. And there's a million exercises. It doesn't have to be 1, 1, 1, 1, 1, 2, 3, 4, 1, 2, 3, 4. You can start mixing your patterns up too. 1, 3, 2, 4. 1, 3, 2, 4. You can mix the strings up, completely mix the patterns up. 1, 3. 1, 3, 2, 4. That causes you to stretch even more. And I've always had a problem. I've tended to start using shorter scale basses. This is the 34. All of my basses are 33 now, actually, because I've got short, stubby little fingers, so I find it uncomfortable to be down too far in this direction. 35s are almost unplayable for me. I also use a narrower spacing. This bass has a wider spacing, so I have to play this bass with a lot more intention because the muscle memory is different than my fretted basses. Getting back, and I will talk about strings and things, playing the fourths to bar or not. I don't want to jump too far off of this too quick. I don't tend to just like lock my finger in place. I tend to roll, which you have to be careful about, especially on fretless, because you're going to pull on the string a little bit. But I kind of chase a little bit and adjust my pressure and maybe roll my hand a little bit. I don't straight bar like a guitar player playing bar chords where you just lock it in place and there it is. Especially on a fretless, depending on the angle of your hand, you'll usually have a little bit of an angle, which means the intonation will be off. I used to just practice that, just getting comfortable rolling my finger back and forth. I suppose you could do that one finger per fret, huh? That's tricky. That's interesting. I've never done that before. But yeah. That will kind of lead into the second part of my discussion after we talk fretless for a little bit. intonation. Slow intention. You can play with a drone. I used to use my open strings as a guide. And you can just take scales. That's a beautiful way to do it. My favorite way to work on intonation is to take iReal Pro and pick a ballad. It can be any tune at ballad tempo, but I pulled up My Funny Valentine. And don't worry about getting fancy with the harmony. The idea is to, again, slow intention. Just play roots and really focus on that sound, because and this is one of the points I wanted to make with regard to fretless that I think can be helpful. And this was made to me by Kai Eckhart, who was one of my old teachers. He, essentially, the thing we love so much about fretless is that it has such a vocal quality. You know, it's got that just great kind of sizzle, and then it's just got this vocal inflection that we like. It sounds more like speech than a fretted bass, and I think that's what a lot of us love about this sound. And taking that comparison further, when we're speaking, we don't speak with perfect intonation and then move around with the inflection of our voice, we use a smooth inflection, and we kind of roll into and roll out of things. And if you really take that vocal inflection, like, quality, and keep it in mind while you're playing fretless, it tends to take the pressure off a little bit. I mean, we want to have good intonation, but it's natural to kind of have a little bit of that, you know, sliding in and out. Don't use it as an excuse to not work on your intonation and just like, oh, I'm feeling it. You know, you want to try and have as much control as possible, but it gives you a certain amount of freedom, and you know, it's a thing to embrace as opposed to a thing to avoid, I guess is what I'm saying. So I'm going to take My Funny Valentine. Oh, wait. We're on Zoom. Oh, I can't share screens. Never mind. I'm just going to play Roots. Yeah, Todd Johnson's bass is at 32. Yeah, I've been thinking of going to 32. I'd actually thinking of going to 30. I love my Mustang. And I've played a friend's 30-inch, what's the name of that? Wonderful Luther. Passed away a few years ago. Can't think of his name. But he used to build 5 and 6 strings at 30-inch, and they were great. I'm thinking of trying to do that. So I'm going to play My Funny Valentine, just Roots. Hope this sounds okay where you guys are. It's nice to do with thirds as well. Kind of like a next level. That is my favorite way to work on intonation, to play very sparse, long tones, legato. It also helps you to develop your relationship with that fretless thing. Learn how your bass, learn what the sustain is like and what it does. It helps you to develop a relationship with the instrument, I find. You really learn how it speaks when you give it time to speak and you're not always throwing notes at it, if that makes sense. Let me touch on a couple of the. I've seen a few things roll by. Sorry. One thing I did see about strings. On here, I have round wound nickel strings. I prefer nickel over steel because I find them much. They just feel better under my fingers. Steel feels like Velcro to me. I've actually been meaning to switch these strings out. Because, you know, a lot of people worry about round wounds chewing up their neck on a fretless, and they will more so than flats or tape wounds, which is what I prefer. But it, not that much, like really, I mean, over the course of like 10 years or more, you know, it might start having an effect, but it's really fairly slight. And I've never minded a little, you know, the character marks, you know, I've never minded little dings and dents and scratches, stuff like that, so I never worried about it, but they will chew into your neck a little more. They will wear little ruts in your neck, in your fretboard, so if you want to avoid that, one way is to use flats. I love tape-wound strings, which is what I have on this guy back here. They're basically steel strings, I believe, with a flat nylon wrap. And they sound a lot like flats. I think they feel even better. The only reason I don't have them on this bass is because I need to pick up a 5-string set. I only have 4-string sets right now. Otherwise, this bass would probably have them too. But, you know, as with everything, you need to find the sound and the feel that works for you. No one answer is right for everybody, so you need to explore a little bit. But as far as the round wound, that's the fretless sound a lot of us hear in our heads, is the steel or nickel round wound vibe. I really love tape wound strings, the way they feel and the way they sound, but they are darker than these nickel strings for sure. I am totally dry. I'm not even going through a preamp. I'm just plugged directly into my interface, Focusrite interface. So there's no compression other than maybe whatever the software is using naturally. Compression, as a general rule, to me, that's something that you use in the studio to make a track pop a little more. I never use it on a gig. The only time I've ever used it on a gig was when I had to slap. Compression can help with slap because it helps to even it out a little bit, keep the lows from getting too low and the highs from getting too high. But it kind of keeps them within a range, but also makes them pop a little bit. I don't understand the science behind it. I'm not that kind of tech guy. But I know it can really help to make your playing punch through a little bit without just being louder or, you know, too present, especially with slap because there's so much dynamic range happening there. I never use fretless on a gig outside of that. Let me check. Yeah, using a backing track with a piano played bass line, you can hear the intonation. Raise voice volume a little bit. Is that a thing? I can also talk louder. We were messing around with levels trying to get it all evenish. Sacramento. Lower the bass or raise. Let me lower the bass a little bit. Is that better? Talking bass. Mixing fretless with the rest of the band. My approach doesn't change playing fretless over playing fretted bass. I'm generally speaking trying to be somewhere sitting just above the kick drum, assuming things are mixed properly. Basically, I depends on the stage. If we're a self-contained unit, I'm trying to mix myself so I'm below the primary harmony and lead instruments. You know, right with the drums, basically. I consider myself an extension of the drummer. If I'm playing a theater or, you know, a gig with a front of house sound man, I only worry about having, I consider my stage volume to be my bass monitor. So I just put it where I want it to play and let them worry about levels at the front of house. Generally where I want it is with the drums sitting just below the primary melody and lead instruments, whether it's a vocalist or guitarist or horn player. But yeah, I don't mix it any differently than I do anything else. I just try and listen to the sound of the band, especially if we have a sound check, as a whole. I try and listen in the third person, and, you know, as if I'm listening to a CD digital download. You know, if I throw my tape on, I'm trying to hear if the levels all feel natural, if it feels organic. You know, it drives me nuts when the bass is way too loud. A lot of players do have that tunnel vision where they're only listening to their tone. You know, it's like the guitar players who need to crank their amps to get the tone they want, and then they're oblivious to the fact that, like, you can't even hear the singer anymore. I've seen a lot of bass players do that same thing. It's best not to get too focused on just your tone. You want to be focused on the sound of the band, and if your tone is working for that, oftentimes the tone that works best for the band, especially in like songwriter sessions or like just like pop and rock tunes, often isn't the sound that I would naturally go for when it's just me and my amp on stage. When I'm getting the tone I want, and I think, yeah, this is killing. And I go, yeah, that's great. Often that is not the tone that actually works for the band as a whole. You need to be willing to wiggle around in that space a little bit and see what works for the band. That's my suggestion anyway. Whenever I pick up a Mustang, it feels too short, and I have a sensation of being cramped. Yeah, I feel like it's a toy bass, like it's a starter bass, like, you know, training wheels, but it's so comfortable. I have so much fun playing a Mustang. I just love this super short scale thing. I had to commit to fretless to give up fretted to get a decent intonation. Yeah, I'm a dabbler, which is why I had that caveat at the top of this. You really do, if you want to, like, really get inside of the fretless and own the intonation and not have to worry about it, which means living with it and making it your primary instrument. And like, I'm just going to play a fretless. I've done that a couple times in my life. I always tend to fall away from that because I read on like 95% of the gigs I do, if not more. And it is really, without that muscle memory, it gets really tricky to start reading, you know, reading melody lines and unison lines, and then you start getting off and you're out of tune. You're like, oh, crap. You know, and then you start doing this with your eyes, and that drives me nuts. I don't like to look at my fretboard when I'm reading music. So I always wind up pulling away from the fretless, even though I just love the sound. But, yeah. Please raise voice volume level. All right, Travis, I am going to raise the voice because the people have spoken. Do do do. 1, 2, 3, 4. All right. Is this better? Tell me if that's too loud. I just moved it like half a number. I don't even know what that means, but there is my level. Okay, better. Sweet. Better, better, better. Yeah, isn't this bass beautiful? This was a Joe Zahn 1 year at NAMM. This was like his show bass for the NAMM show. And I've never played a five string. I'd never had a five string. If I was going to get a fretless, my idea was to either probably get a four, but if anything, four or six, because those are my two things. But this thing just sounded so good, and it was so beautiful, and I talked him into letting me buy it. I put charging it. I didn't have any money to buy it, but I was like, I need to go home with that bass. You know, that's just, there's only one way this conversation can end, so let me know what we need to do to get there. Oh, sanding out the, yeah, well, every time you sand out grooves, that will change things. Coated flats. There you go. 40 years. Yeah, that'll do it. I wonder if you needed, was the sanding a necessity because it was affecting the playability of the instrument, or was it an aesthetic thing? Labella white nylons do it for me. Yeah, that's the, basically, I mean, those are the D'Addario tape wounds, but same. Other than the color. Lined or unlined, whatever makes it better for you, whatever helps you to play better is good. I don't get into purist crap. there is no right answer. The right answer is whatever makes you play better is better, I think. If I had my druthers, this would probably have lines all the way across. You can see it's got the little cheater lines up top, which is like, you know, for your eyes only. Which I couldn't play it otherwise. I've had fretlesses without just completely blank necks, and in my mind I'm like, yeah, I'll get used to it. And I'm like, no, because I never made it my home base, I never got used to it. Which is kind of a nice segue. Oh, wait. Can you set the tone you like in your amp on stage and then let the sound engineer sort the mix and the PA for the front of house? Yeah. Yes. I mean, if you're playing a large venue, generally speaking, I don't like them to have to play with my tone too much. Unless, you know, if I know the sound person and I trust the sound person. But yeah, you know, you certainly, if it doesn't sound good to you when you're playing, it's going to be hard to play. So you need to find a happy place. But generally what I was saying was, if it sounds right for the song, it'll sound right for you in that context. But generally speaking, I always start with the tone that I like. And then if I feel like something isn't working for the song or for the group as a whole, I'll start changing things. But for the most part, if there's a front of house engineer, I generally send them a post EQ direct signal. Most DIs have a post or pre switch. So I send them post EQ, so I'm sending them what I'm hearing. And oftentimes, if it's not working, they'll ask me to go pre, so it's just a clean, direct sound, and they can tweak it for the house. If they want to tweak it for the house, it's best to send them a pre-EQ signal, so it's nothing but your instrument through the DI without a bunch of EQ before they start EQing it again, because that can too much EQing on multi, you know, if you're EQing it on your bass, EQing it on your amp, EQ it on your DI pedal, and then they're EQing it at the front of house, it can get a little strange. Yeah, the black nylons are definitely darker, which is why I like them. I've never been a bright bass sound guy. Okay, so let me... my segue was this. And I didn't actually even talk about everything with fretless. Back up. Play. We've covered this slowly and intentionally through changes, or just within a scale, one scale through a tuner, diatonic, melody notes against a drone, anything like that. I also used to like playing fifths, power chords, because you can really hear the interval of a fifth is generally perfect. That refers to the way the wavelengths line up. Perfect fourths and perfect fifths, I think. That's what I was told once, I don't know. But you can really hear when it's out. More so than with other notes. But generally on a fretless, you can always hear that waver when the notes are out of tune. But fifths are a nice place to start. This is such a consonant sound. It's very easy to hear when it's wrong. Beyond that, I like tenths a lot. Tenths are a great way because they also force you to, you know, putting the third an octave up. You can do it diatonically. But through changes is also nice. Let me turn off the bass player on this thing. And this is a good test because especially when you're playing a few strings apart and playing two notes at once, it can really throw you for a loop. So we're in there. So you can really hear when it's a little bit out. Tenths are very nice. What's interesting about fretless is you can actually get more in tune with a fretless than you can with a fretted bass. On your fretted bass, a lot of the intervals are actually just a little bit out of tune because with equal temperament, they round the corners to divide octaves into 12 equal parts, which means a lot of the notes are a little bit out of tune. If you've ever played a tenth, the third and the root especially, do that on a fretted bass and it's always out of tune, especially open string. Like actually you need to flatten your third a little bit to get that in tune. On a fretted bass, it's always a little bit sharp. So on a fretless bass, once you've developed and gotten comfortable and made it your home bass and developed a relationship with that thing, you can start to get a sense of how to actually play in tune better than you can on a fretted bass, which is interesting. Which is another nice segue into the other thing I wanted to talk about today, which is everything that you work on in music. I get a lot of questions, and a lot of my time coming up was spent on pre-internet asking people, and post-internet online looking for answers, trying to find what is the best way to do this, what is the best way to do that, how should I think about rhythm, how do I count this, how do I play, what do I, you know. And it's important to seek out all of that kind of information, and important to pay close attention to what people tell you and explore that stuff for yourself. But ultimately, what needs to happen is that you need to develop your own relationship with music and your own way of thinking about things. I don't know if it's a big secret, but the thing a lot of my students are surprised to find out about is that even among, you know, top tier players, they tend to think about things differently, and they hold. I've done gigs with phenomenal drummers doing odd meter fusion stuff, whatever it is, and only to come to realize that we don't even really internalize the one in the same place on a groove somewhere. They're feeling it this way, I'm feeling it that way. I can't play it the way they're feeling it. If I try and feel it like that, I can no longer play it. I have to feel it the way I'm feeling it. And as long as we're both phrasing well together within that, it's okay. I've written charts for people on sessions, and I've been handed charts on sessions where I need to rewrite them in my own way so I can play them more comfortably. I've talked about how to think about playing over certain chord types, and I've had other people say, oh, I think about it this way. And I'm like, wow, that confuses the hell out of me, but if it works for you, great. That's like, we're both actually playing it the same way, just coming at it from different angles intellectually. So what I'm getting at is that you need to explore the myriad of ways there is to understand and internalize and assimilate information. And then if you have something like, oh, I always think about it this way, is this okay? The answer is yes. As long as it allows you to play it well and play it properly, absolutely, think about it that way. As long as you never use that as an excuse to not do the work and explore the myriad of ways there is to understand information. You know, if you have a teacher say, you know, work on your modes and do them this way, give that a fair shake. And if it doesn't resonate with you, but you can think of another way to do it, that's fine, as far as I'm concerned. That was my whole thing when I dropped out of Berkeley. I didn't know what they were talking about. I couldn't understand and internalize the information in the way they were presenting it to me. And it made me feel really bad about myself. Like, I obviously just don't have what it takes to do this thing. Like, I don't get it. But, you know, handful of crappy jobs later, and I was like, well, double down. I was like, I'd still rather do this, so why not do it? Who cares if I'm not going to be great? But then I came to understand a lot of the information in my own way, through my own explorations, and taking those things they said and trying to turn it around and go, well, what about, you know, check it out for the, you know, looking at things from different angles to find what resonated with me and learning how I learned, and then embracing that thing, that way of learning and that way of understanding information. Question, do you play upright as well? Not in front of people, no. Well, no. If so, can you compare upright versus fretless and provide some suggestions for transitioning from fretless to upright? I don't play upright. I mean, I have one and I suck. As long as you're not worried about time, tone, or intonation, I'm your guy. But transitioning from upright to electric bass in general, the one thing you may want to get away from is the altered fingering. I forget what it is. Is it a, you know, playing everything like that? Use all four fingers. Try and get that one finger per fret thing happening. And break the habit of starting low, traveling up in first position, and then crawling up the D and G strings. Develop a relationship with the entire fretboard. I encourage a lot of my doubling students who are primarily upright players getting comfortable with electric to start reading a lot. I like the Latin bass book or classical etudes, whatever, but to do it in the middle of the fretboard so they can develop a more solid relationship. In fact, I even suggested with one student, start running your scales, but do it in the opposite way of an upright. Instead of climbing up in first position and then scaling up the G string, crawl up on the E string and then scale up the fretboard and then down the E string and then up the A string. Whatever you need to do to develop more of a relationship with the middle of the fretboard. That's the one thing I see a lot of upright players do, is kind of avoid all of this. They just, it's D and G strings and then first position. Also, beware of your plucking hand position. There's a tendency with upright players, you know, they're so used to plucking like that, that they tend to crank their wrist. And sorry, farting out, I'm trying to play too hard. They play a lot like that, because they're used to playing on this side of their finger. If you really want to explore electric technique and be a real doubler, you know, sound like either instrument is your primary instrument, you need to get more comfortable with kind of playing with the other side of your fingers, but more slight corner of these fingers. And the main thing is the straight wrist, you know, not too much of this, certainly not that, you know, now you're getting multiple angles going. Keep it ergonomic, keep your wrist fairly straight. You can even bend your back. Sorry, I realized you couldn't see my... Five string. I'm so not used to five string. You know, you can still get that sound by playing up here, but you don't need to do it like this. So that's my advice for upright players. Favorite fretless exercises, performance pieces, general specifics to the fretless. My exercises are pretty much what I covered. Playing scales through a tuner, scales up each string individually so you practice shifting, and then playing just solid roots or thirds or tenths, basic chord shapes through changes very slowly. Power chords as well. You can also just practice your intervals. Just playing major thirds. Arpeggios are wonderful. Slowly. Any of that kind of stuff is going to be wonderful. As far as performance pieces and anything like that, depends on your style. Tony, Fretless Monster, he called himself. I'm forgetting his name. There's a lot of great fretless players. I mean, Jocko, obviously. Anything he did is worth exploring. Michael Manring. I mean, it doesn't have to be crazy detuning and all of the Ebo stuff, but his fretless playing. I mean, you can check out some Sad Happy tracks. He played in a lot of just bands, too. You know, find somebody you like and emulate their sound. You know, start learning their grooves. Pearl Jam, Jeff Ament, wasn't he a fretless guy primarily? I think so. A lot of great fretless players. Pino Palladino. Especially in the 80s and stuff like that, he played a lot of fretless, a lot of great melodies, a lot of great fretless lines. None are like popping off in my head as like the, oh yeah, you got to check out this. Do you use epoxy on your fretboard? No. Like Bondo? Tony Levin. Yep, Tony Levin. Like epoxy on your fretboard. What is that? When I hear epoxy, I think of like spackle and Bondo and stuff like that. The only thing I ever use on my fretboard is a little bit of either linseed oil or Murphy's oil soap when I want to clean them. Just like a dollop in some warm water and a rag. Get it going on there. I never do anything else. Tony Franklin. Yes. There you go. Alfonso. Oh, yeah. Alfonso. Oh, Bondo. Yeah, well, Jocko did that because he was spackling. He ripped out the frets. So he used epoxy to fill in the old fret slots. So he was spackling his bass. No, I've never done that. Every fretless I've ever had, and this is the only fretless I still have, was made to be fretless, so I never needed to do that. Oh, the Padula Buzz. I think that's more like is that epoxy? An epoxy finish? Yeah, these are all just, I mean, this is his on, so it's his Fenowood thing, which is a graphite neck for stability, and then the fretboard is like heat compressed maple injected with resin. So it still has a bit of a wood sound, but it's very hard, like the graphite. So it's a slight variation, but yeah, no, I've never done that. I do like the Padulas. If that's what they do, it works for them. Jocko epoxied the frets. Yeah, after he pulled them out, right? Like, epoxied the... Yeah, there you go. Back to my point. Sire makes great everything. Super affordable. Yeah, I've been meaning to pick up a Sire. Every time I have a student come through with a Sire, I'd like, hey, let me check that out. And it's always killing. They sound great, they play great, and they're super cheap, relatively speaking. Oh, all right. I've never had a Sans amp. I've used them on stage. A lot of backline crews have the Sans amp. They're nice. And I did use the LeBass from Two Notes Engineering. I've tried all their preamps for live. When I tour with Gino Vannelli, there's no amps on stage. It's just direct to front of house, and then we all use in-ears. So it sounds a little bit like we're playing, you know, like we're listening to a CD when we play. It's a trip. So I've tried a lot of different preamps. The two-note stuff is great. I also used to use their amp modeler, which was cool. I mainly used it for me, just so the bass sounded better in my ears, in my send. But lately, there's no gigs. But last year, I wound up just using the... I've lightened my load considerably. I got sick of traveling with so much stuff and having extra cases. So now I'm just like, what can I fit in my one suitcase and how long are we going to be gone? So basically, my pedal board has turned into the Aguilar AG, the Tone Hammer, sorry, the Tone Hammer DI box with the EQ. And I'm an Aguilar guy, so I know how that EQ works, and it always sounds good. And I can power it via phantom power from front of house, so I don't even need to travel with a power cable. And then MXR Vintage Octave, one of their little pedals, and Electro Harmonics, TC Electronics, Reverb, Tone of Fame at something. One of their little reverb pedals, just basically to emulate the fretless sound, get more reverb. You know, I just make it super wet, and it's kind of good enough. I used to travel with two basses. I'd play this and my fretted bass, and it just got to be too much running around airports with two basses on my back. But yeah, Sans amp or Two Notes or the Aguilar Tone Hammer pedal, I love. What do you recommend for fretted players playing flats to get a more fretless sound? That's a tough one. Fretted bass with flats is kind of like all the things a fretless sound isn't. Fretless sound, one of the things that makes a fretless sound, I mean, it's the mwah thing, but it's also the sustain and the vibrato that really can... I mean, as far as emulating a fretless, the way I do it on a, I often get asked if I'm playing fretless on gigs when I'm not, because I tend to slide into notes, you know, little rolls, and I also use a lot of vibrato this way on my fretted instruments, also this way. So that's two ways in which you can emulate the fretless sound a little bit, but playing flats on a fretted, there's not going to be any sustain or anything like that. So, Hall of Fame. That's what it is. Thank you, Travis. Travis knows everything. Yeah, it's cool with the TC Electronics stuff is they have the tone print stuff. So I have a Chris Mindoki reverb that I just downloaded, and then, you know, you hold the phone to the pickups and it loads the setting into the pedal. It's pretty wild, and it actually works. Yeah, Jamerson used flats. Old, ancient flats. But he didn't, I wouldn't say he had a fretless sound either. Yeah. Tips on fretless cutting through the cutting through live with the same power as fretted bass in a hard rock heavy type four piece band. I've never considered the EQ. Sorry. I never considered EQing differently. I never noticed that my fretless didn't cut any, you know, didn't cut more than my fretted. Again, like I said earlier, I EQ for where I'm standing on stage, trying to sit in between the drums and the lead instruments with the drums, maybe just on top of the kick. And as far as tone goes, the magic is in the mids. If you want more punch and more presence, low mids. You know, if you just crank the bass, you're getting a lot of body, but it's kind of woofy body. It's not articulate body. Low mids give you a little bit of punch. High mids give you clarity without the glass, without that super glassy, crispy thing on top. So I tend to focus on mids when it comes to EQing myself and my presence in live situations. So explore that. I never really thought to approach it differently with fretless than I do fretted. My approach is kind of always the same. Listen to the bass in the context of the band and micro adjust as necessary and make sure I'm not too loud. Little bit of distortion. Yeah, I use the Tone Hammer 700. Was the 500. Now I have a 700. And it's got that overdrive knob. I always set that at like 9 o'clock. I mean, 7 o'clock is off. So, like, I basically put it up two notches. Even on jazz gigs, anything. So there's just a little bit of grit. I don't like it. I don't like my sound to get too clean. I like it dark and gritty. Whether I'm playing fretless or fretted bass. So, yeah, that was kind of my spiel on fretless, and then the idea of developing, being open to developing your own relationship with information. They're keeping in mind that there never is only one way to understand something. I used to get pretty hung up trying to read textbooks and harmony books and theory books and rhythm books because I wouldn't understand the information in the same way they were presenting it. And I always felt like it was wrong, and I was trying to force myself to understand things in their way, only to realize that I understood them in a slightly different way. But as long as you understand them and can, in a meaningful way, a musically viable way, and can employ that information, there's no wrong way to do it. Just last night, I did a video session, and there's some odd meter type stuff in there. And out of curiosity, the singer asked us how we were feeling things, and it turns out the drummer and I were feeling them in completely different ways. We were playing together, and it sounded really good, but he was focused on smaller subdivisions. And I was feeling longer subdivisions. I was feeling a big, long seven. He was feeling a bunch of shorter sevens. But you put them together, and as long as we're playing together well and it sounds musical, it's cool. To me, it just made the way the line was written made more sense to feel a large beat than a small beat. Also allowed me to be a little more relaxed in my approach, since I didn't have all these subdivisions ticking away on the inside. But yeah, you know, and neither one of us was wrong or right. You know, well, we were both right because it worked for us. How do you get a good sound for recording? I'm not using a DAW. By using a DAW, there's, you know, the one you can, the Roland Go Cube. It's a little $100 little mixer. I use it for traveling in like hotel sheds. It's got a bunch of inputs. You can just plug your bass right into it. It's USB powered. Put your headphones into it. You can actually have a, you know, an aux in for if you want to play to things on your phone. But you can also, if you just use, plug it into your phone, I've used it plugged into my iPad with the iPad powering it, and then recorded things. There's been times where I needed to shoot a video on the road. And so I shoot the video with my phone, record everything I'm doing into the iPad, into GarageBand, and then just, you know, mix it in the iPad in iMovie or something, and it works really well. So that's the closest, the Roland Go is the closest you can get to getting a decent sound that I found without a DAW. Otherwise, you need some kind of interface. And the better. The better the interface, the better the converters will be, which convert the signal to digital. I think that's what they do. And I used to always try and find the cheapest DAW I could find, just because I was, you know, couldn't afford anything better, and it always sounded like crap. And then one day, I tried a friend's UA, Universal Audio, and it just sounded like amazing. So I still don't have UA, but I have a Focusrite now, which is great. And you can just get a little two channel. You know, it's like if music is really your thing and it's what you do. It's priorities, you know. Get that two-channel focus right before the next, you know, PlayStation or Xbox, and then you'll always have it. You know, you just save up and get that one thing, and you'll always have it, and you'll always be able to get great sound. So it was worth it in my mind. But you kind of roll and go cube. Otherwise, get a full-on DAW. Talk a little bit about percussive aspects to your playing, ghost notes, and your relationship with the drummer. Yeah, I mean, there are a lot of my webinars and my groove course at Scott's that talk a lot about that kind of stuff. But I am a drummer at heart. Rhythm is my first language, and a lot of my ghost notes that I play, I mean, I'm doing that in the same way that a drummer plays ghost notes on their snare. And I'm really focused on dynamics, and it's basically just feeling the pulse, the smaller subdivisions traveling, moving through me, and just articulating which notes I actually want to hit. But I used to practice ghost notes with dynamics. Playing little scales, little things. You know, I've developed so much of my stuff, the right hand drive book and my right hand drive. I think there's a few webinars on this stuff. plucking. A lot of it had to do with playing with rhythm and rhythmic groupings and different fingerings. And playing with different things like that. I get very specific in there and go through a whole kind of treasure trove of rhythmic ideas. But basically, practice like a drummer. Pick up a drum rudiment book and practice playing both dynamically and rhythmically. I separated my rhythmic practice from my harmonic practice for a long time, and then I would put them together to form new exercises. For example, hopefully this isn't too loud. Let's see. Let's lower this. So here we have a metronome. Hopefully this volume is okay. Good. Say I want to work on 8th note triplets. No, actually, let's say 16th notes dotted 8th notes. Daka, 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 daka. 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3. They'll come around every 3 bars. So I used to practice first articulating the first of the 8th note triplets and then muting the other two. This is a little fast, I apologize. Best to work on this stuff slow. Once I can get that, scale, once I can get that, scale in broken intervals. Scale in broken sixths, you know, all the broken intervals. Once I can do that, I'm just like blasting through the process. I might have stayed with each one of those things for a week, you know, whatever it is. But then I take that rhythmic exercise and start applying it to more applicable harmony. So let's say before we were working through My Funny Valentine. I'll set it at the same tempo. That was 80 BPM. So now I'm going to try and play dotted eighth notes through a tune, kind of walking, maybe just roots and fifths or something. So I start applying them in different ways like that. The swing's a little weird to do that through. I apologize for that. But I just find different ways to apply rhythmic information to my harmonic information, really internalizing that rhythmic grid. And that's really what it's all about. I mean, if you want to practice ghost notes, you know, learn some Tower of Power, learn some Jaco lines, slow them down. Really what was going on, especially with Jaco, I mean, I can't do the Jaco thing, but I mean, it was really just, he was feeling, you could feel all of those 16th notes happening. And they had a little bit of a swing, you know, it was all about the time feel that was appropriate for whatever music he was playing. Trying to do this on a fretless for me is like, it's especially because it's a Jaco thing. How's that go? Something like that. That was from his instructional video. I learned that when I was a kid. Again, this bass has wider spacing than I'm used to, so it's a little funny, but no excuses. But you can feel in that line. You know, you can almost picture like a second line New Orleans drummer, and you can practice like that. I implore you to do it slowly first, to make sure you're really feeling all of those subdivisions. But learn, you know, learn the vocabulary. Find a bass line that kind of embodies that thing that you want to work on, and learn it. Even if it's just one bar of it. I'm not saying learn 9 minutes of a tune, but just grab one phrase or one little thing, and slow it down. Work on it. Internalize it. Try and turn it around. See what happens if you start that line an eighth note later. See what happens if you make that major line minor. You know, really just get inside of it, and that stuff starts to become vocabulary. Really, really, our vocabulary is the culmination of our influences, the things we listen to, the ways in which we internalize and think about information affects the way we express information. But then it's the stuff we study, stealing licks, stealing grooves, all that stuff. Don't worry about, I don't want to just sound like, you know, Pino by learning a bunch of Pino. Like, you're not gonna. One, because you don't have his influences. You don't have you're not coming from the same place he was, and you're gonna mix those things within the other influences that you have. Like, you can't help but sound like you when you play. So just take things that you like and take them apart and drill them and internalize them and work on them and get your own perspective on them. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, good. Good, good, good. Canadian Thanksgiving. Eat, my friend. Mark, enjoy. Damien, what are your thoughts on sending two signals into your DAW, one DI and one mic, and blending using an SWR redhead with a Telefunken tube? That's very specific. generally, I mean, if I'm in a studio, I always like having the DI sound. I have a Ready Tube DI that I like, that I bring, that's in my studio go box. I have a little Pelican case I bring to every session. But I always encourage them to mic my cab. Actually, I'm going to tell you. I did a session, and the engineer was throwing a mic on the cab, and I said, man, you're welcome to. It was a low volume thing. And I was like, you know, for this session, I don't know if it's necessary. The most mics don't sound like my rig when you put them on my rig. But this guy used a Sennheiser MD421. Sennheiser MD421. And he stuck it in front of my rig and recorded the line out of my Aguilar, stuck it in front of, I was playing the Aguilar Tonehammer 700 in front of, in the 112, one of the lightweight SL 112s. And while we're during playback, he's like, oh, by the way, and he soloed the bass. He's like, here's your DI. I was like, all right, yeah, sounds clean, sounds good. And here's the Sennheiser. And it sounded like my amp. I was really amazed. So much so that I whipped out my phone and took a mic. I was like, what mic is that? I still don't have one, but I think they're like $300 or something. But my thoughts on sending two signals is do it. I don't do it for like home recording, because this, I don't know that it's necessary and it's worth the extra trouble to bring my rig in. From here, which my rig doesn't live in here because I'm gigging so much, it lives by the car. the more the better, and then you blend them appropriately. You know, having a little bit of live room sound in with that DI can really help bring it to life and make it sound not so sterile and clean. Oh, right on. Thank you for buying the books. I hope you dig them. Right on. People seem to like them. I worked hard on it. So, yeah. I've never found the SWR stuff to sound that great, but as long as the DI is cool, which I believe the DIs on those are solid. Spectre, fretless 5-string, 35-inch, 2-octave neck, half-round strings. There you go. Piezo and EMG pickups can find used on B, reverb at a good price. Used on gospel songs, the low C will bring tears to your eyes. Low C. Oh, so you tune. Yeah. Yeah. Yep, yeah. Sounds like a nice rig. The Spectres are nice. Yeah, anybody else have any questions? I kind of went through my spiel. To recap, for those who swung in late, fretless intonation, practice slowly and with intention through a tuner, scales, long tones, fifths, tenths. There it is. Diatonic tenths are nice. And then, you know, grab iReal Pro, throw on a ballad, and just play roots. And really focus on that one finger per fret, keeping a good technique to build that muscle memory, and it'll come together. Do you rely more on a tuner than your ears? No. I only rely on the tuner when I'm playing by myself through a tuner. But if I'm playing to a track, then I'm going to play to the track. Because like I said, the tuners are set for equal temperament. And basses aren't entirely in tune everywhere. I mean, tuners should be in tune everywhere. A good chromatic tuner, I think. This is where I get into trouble because I don't know things. But I always rely on my ears first. I mean, the general rule of thumb, if it sounds good, it is good. I don't care what the computer tells me. That's it. Right on, Stone Queen. When would you pick hands down a fretted bass instead of a fretless? Well, I'm a fretted player. Fretless is something I like the sound a lot. I think it's neat. It's fun to play with. And I get asked to do it in the studio and occasional gigs. But I've always been a fretted player, so I always grab the fretted unless somebody says fretless, or if somebody sends me a track to record and I think, oh, this could be really nice on a fretless, I'll send them a fretless version and be like, what do you think of this? It's a very specific sound. It's not for everything. Especially because aside from Edgar Meyer and like a couple of upright players I can think of, it's very hard to not play with vibrato, and vibrato isn't something you necessarily want on everything. But again, it's all personal preference. I think if you want to be a really solid fretless player, you probably need to just kind of marry the instrument for a little while and just play fretless for a long while to really develop a relationship with the instrument and with the sound. So that would be my advice. Do you have any muting technique tips? New player here. Hey, Travis, can you send... I've done entire clinics on the muting thing. You should probably just watch one of those. Travis will likely put up a link any second because he's a ninja. Muting techniques. There are a lot of ways to mute. I'm trying to think of how to get into it without not recapping an entire... First, explore palm muting, which is when you take your palm and say it's resting on the bridge, and just over the bridge so it's on the strings. So you're not killing the string, but it's also not ringing open. And you can practice playing with your thumb. Or your thumb ended that index. I use 3. Boom. There's the Muting Techniques webinar. I encourage you to watch that. That has kind of got my, oh, here's all the different ways I know how to mute things. Herbie Flowers. I don't know him. Yeah, the best fretless players can do it. Five stringers? No, I mean, in my mind, like I said, five isn't my instrument. I bought this because it was just such a great freaking bass. Like, I didn't care if it was five. If I had my druthers, it would be a four. I'm either a four or a six. I never played five except for this one bass. In a lot of ways, I think five's probably the best of all worlds. I prefer a four string, but it is nice to be able to get that. Sometimes you just need to get an E flat or a D, and man, when you need to go low instead of going high, it's nice to be able to, and the sound is thunder. There's also a sound, certain sound that four strings and five strings get that I feel like we lose with a six. I can't put my finger on what it is. I don't know if it's a more mass thing. But there's a certain thing I can get out of a four string that I can't get out of a six, and vice versa. And I've talked to Pete Schold about it, and he said, yeah, you know, he kind of agrees with me. You can get it with a five, though. Again, I'm not, that relates more to my fretted basses. I don't know that, as long as the music is happening, there are no wrong or right reasons. It's all in what you do with it. I mean, take Yves Carbone. He plays a 12-string fretless. He also plays a 2-string bass. He's kind of got them all. But, you know, when you see that thing, you go, oh, God, okay, here we go again. And then he starts playing, and it's lovely. He's not overdoing nothing. It's just, it's music. And it just shows to go you. It's all about what comes out. It doesn't matter what you're playing. I'm sure, you know, I could overplay on a 1-string bass and I could underplay on a 12-string bass. It's really more about treating the music with respect and trying to sound like the song wants you to sound and play like the song wants you to play. Not coming into it with preconceived notions and an agenda. That's for my 2 cents. Yeah. Break down the chords you played. Ooh, I don't know. I would think I was just making stuff up. if it was during the play along, I was playing My Funny Valentine. Here just now, I think I was just playing diatonic C major, D minor, E minor, F major. Minor, because I'm feeling fancy. F sharp minor, I mean. Yeah, I tend to do primarily diatonic things, or very non-diatonic by just moving individual voices around. Yeah, I'm not gonna try to do that on a fretless. 12th fret. Wait. I saw something about thumb position. How do you handle left hand technique in the extreme upper register? Do you switch to a thumb position like an upright? Nope. How do you deal with the closer note spacing? Not all basses are made to be played that high. That's one thing I've discovered for sure. I tend not to go that high. This is actually a 26. It's got 26 fret markers, but it keeps going. I tend not to go too much above the high C on my G string, maybe up to a D. I definitely don't do the thumb. I used to do that a little bit on one of my old basses, actually, now that I think about it, because it just, there was no access up here, and so there was no option but to kind of put my thumb kind of on the side of the fretboard. But especially on a fretless, technique is kind of everything. The dealing with the smaller string spacing, Again, it's muscle memory, so you need to practice playing slowly and with intention in that register of the instrument if you want to have an intonated relationship with that area of the instrument, because it's all muscle memory. I also do tend to look more when I'm playing up there on a fretless, especially. On a fretted, I'm visualizing the fretboard in my mind's eye, and I can feel the frets under my fingers, so I always kind of know where I am. If I have to do any kind of intervallic, you know, like major third, I'll probably look at that. Practice. It's really the only way to get comfortable with any register of the neck. Take everything that you've got on lock down here, and make sure you've got it on lock right here. Make sure you've got it on lock right here. Make sure you've got it on lock right there. You know, if you can only play something well here, I wouldn't say you've got it. I wouldn't say you've got it until you could play it anywhere on the instrument. And in more than one way, not just relying on one fingering, whatever that thing is. So that's really the only way to get comfortable up there. But I don't tend to do thumb position on an electric bass, although you could. Like I said, there's no one way. If it works for you, you know, if you're coming from an upright and thumb position feels right, crush it, rock it, do it. Do you have a method to tune the fretless bass on the 12th fret, or do you leave the bass all alone without any setting and adjusting? Wait. Do you have a method to tune the fretless bass on the 12th fret, or do you leave the bass all alone without any setting up and adjusting and playing using all your ears? I tend to tune all of my basses, like before the gig, with the 12th fret harmonic. That's primarily because, especially on the E and the A strings, the tuner will read that better than that. You'll get a more accurate reading, especially on the B string, with the 12th fret harmonic than you will the thunder down below there. On my fretted bass, interestingly, what I tend to do is to tune with the 12th fret harmonic and then spot check it with my 3rd fret. I don't know. I noticed on something, like I was playing, I think it was on a session, and my bass was in tune on the open strings, but the thing I was playing didn't sound in tune. This is on a fretted bass. So I looked and I thought, well, I'm playing a bunch of fretted notes. Let me tune to the fretted notes. And I found that when I tuned to the 3rd fret, everything in here was far more in tune, and it was only my open strings that were a little bit out, and I don't tend to use open strings very much. Even if I have the opportunity, I'll probably play them on the 5th fret of the string below instead of that. So I've begun getting my basic tuning level there on all my fretted basses and then refining it with the 3rd fret on every string. On a fretless, I'm not going to do that because my intonation isn't good enough. So I tend to just tune open strings and then use my ear to micro-adjust. You know, if I'm... Say I've got that going and I... There it is, you know, or I'll micro adjust as necessary. And again, I talked about that before, how with a fretless bass you actually have more of an opportunity to play more in tune than you can on a fretted bass, because everything's a little bit out of tune on a fretted bass. With fretless bass, you can micro-adjust using your ears. That sounds more in tune to me than that, which is actually where the note is. Tenths want to be... The space is too wide. You need to go a little flat to get your tenth in tune. So it's interesting, you know, once you develop a relationship with the fretless, that's when I really realized, like, you know, this could be really interesting. If speaking back to what I talked about a vocal inflection and not stressing so much about imperfect intonations and just allowing things to exist as they are and micro adjust, you'll get better and more refined over time. So as long as you're aware of it and always micro-adjusting. You shouldn't need to micro-adjust as much later on. But if you really put it, put your ears first with your intonation, then you can really start to actually play more in tune. I start to get a feel for the thirds needing to be a little bit flat in order to actually be in tune. It's pretty interesting. So yeah. Doop 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 a doo. Right on. Yeah, any other questions? I actually do have a rehearsal. I have a crazy day. I have this and then a rehearsal at one local time. And then a gig. It's like old times. I forgot what it was like to be busy. These are, I'm actually going to be getting some covers to, because they reflect too much light. They're called Air Hush. A buddy of mine is making these, and they've been installing them in studios, and actually FEMA has been using them for like pop-up medical facilities. They compress very small, and you can take them apart, and they're just 2x2 flat squares, but you inflate, they're inflatable on the inside. They're sound panels, and then you can configure them in any number of ways. They've been using them for all kinds of different things, but a buddy of mine is one of the main Air Hush guys, and they had some old demo panels that he was nice enough to hook me up for in the studio here, and they're actually great because I deal with a lot of street noise. There's streets on both sides of this wall, and there's a lot of muffler action and motorcycles and things like that in this neighborhood, and it actually helps greatly. They've done a great job, and I don't even have real isolation in here. It's just these two walls, but yeah, they're sound panels, but they are very reflective. So I'm gonna get. He's been working on making these things that'll. Because they don't, not all installations want them to be see-through, you know, if they're using them for office spaces or, you know, medical facilities and stuff like that. So they have something that's going to fit inside each panel to break off the see-through and the light reflection. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm even wearing this shirt used to not fit me, and now it's like, now it's big on me. Yeah, I lost 85 pounds 2019. Thank you. I feel good without the extra weight, that's for sure. kinda, don't tune your fretless, live on the streets. Yeah. you're only half wrong, Thumpenstein. Right. It does look like a wine cellar. I don't drink, though. I wish I could. I think I'm allergic to alcohol or something. Something happened. My body just doesn't like it. Half a beer and I get an instant headache, and which it's okay. I've made peace with that. All right. Beautiful. And as always, I'd like to make myself available to everybody. So feel free to shoot me a message through social media, or I have my educational site, baseeducation.com. You can always shoot me a message through there. You don't have to be a member to shoot me a message through there. But happy to make myself available to everybody if you have any questions about any of this stuff, or just questions about music in general. I try and get back to everybody as soon as I can. But thank you all for hanging and for attending. And yeah, hope you found that at least a little bit useful. Yeah, Travis, I love this guy. Actually, Bass Player Magazine just did a write-up about me and BassEducation.com. People have been really digging it. Very cheap. Affordable, not cheap. Yeah, I drank my share before that all went to hell. So, beautiful. Y'all take care, be well, be safe, and I'll see you on the next one. Thank you, everybody. Appreciate the conversation.